Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listener. You know, as I said, I'm on the telephone. I am so happy to see you joining me. Today's topic, social justice and value of education. I was struck with this topic watching a Pivot program that airs on one of the public television stations. And my colleague in North Carolina and I have been coming to you for several weeks now talking about social justice. And I think I have my collaborator with me now. How are you, Cassandra?
Fine, Dr. Bowles. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm so glad to see you joining me today. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the marquee, and I'll just introduce it. One of the things that we talked about in social justice is what are the things that create oppression, at least in my mind, that's what we've been talking about. Certainly racism is a big deal. And what opened my eyes today to talk about education is in the mid-70s, it seems that when Ronald Reagan came into office, he was opposed to the Pell Grant and a number of governmental-supported higher education loans. And it seemed that what he was saying was rather awful, and there were many proponents saying he's an advocate of the class system. He's the advocate of keeping the small man down. But what I don't know whether Ronald Reagan was right or not, so I'm going to go on record saying I'm not siding with Ronald Reagan, but what has happened is the focus of the United States was towards higher education. And I know my father said education was everything, and all of my brothers and sisters, and there's eight of us, did go to higher education, college, or even beyond. But no one suspected, at least from all the information I saw today on the news and watching the program I just mentioned, no one expected that young people would be saddled with a lifetime of debt in the name of higher education. Now, what looked like the government endorsing Americans to become more educated, there was a backdoor situation. And unfortunately, Cassandra, we keep seeing how the majority always designed this backdoor situation. We had the scandal in 2003, 4, and 5 with the banks, how the banks were selling houses to people who could not afford it, but they made it appear as they could by the balloon mortgages, and 3 to 4 years later, the whole housing industry collapsed, and the banks were able to get the houses back, and this was something well planned out. It wasn't an accident. It didn't even start with goodwill, and when they were found out, no one really got punished, and all those who had invested monies who lost everything in foreclosure suffered the consequences. Well, there are some who say that the advocacy of higher education is exactly like what the banks did. They first convinced the people that when your child's going through high school, you push him to go on to college. Then they convinced the people that if you borrow money and it's a government loan, you can get your education. But no one suspected that 10 days after you graduate from your whatever program, your bill is due. No one promised you a job, and when your bill became due, that same government, that same banking institution could start adding interest on the money that you borrowed. So a $25,000 loan can suddenly become $100,000, on up to $200,000, and guess what? Today, and I did put some statistics on the marquee, there are people who are in their retirement having their Social Security check garnished to pay back student loans. I laugh because that's ridiculous. If the whole concept of education is equality, make us more competitive worldwide, to give us a platform for the future, how do you offer all of that and then snatch it back by having a 20-something-year-old be in a $250,000 debt and no job? It would be different if with graduation there was a guaranteed employment, but there's not. So welcome, Cassandra, please. If you have listened and have comment, I welcome it now. How are you, by the way?
I'm doing well, thanks. I was looking at the marquee a few moments before I called in, and I can truly relate to what is being said. I can remember graduating when I first graduated from seminary, and the degree was a Master's of Divinity in Pastoral Care and Counseling. And for some reason, I believed with that degree, I would be able to do Christian counseling, you know.
Yeah.
And being a female in ministry, when I graduated, there was no place for me to go. There
was
no paid work available. So, yes, you have these student loans and you have these educational experiences, but no place to put it. You know, the church don't necessarily pay females for their ministry, or not the church that
I
am a member of.
I understand.
And
well,
then
also, there are some, and I'll certainly give you back the floor, but just hearing that, there are some who, when you have a degree, say, what's your experience? Well, if you were taking all
exactly.
your time getting a degree, you won't have that experience that they require too often when you're looking at the job. Please do continue, because I'm not familiar with the ministry pathway and what are the opportunities.
Yeah, and so I began to apply for jobs as a chaplain, and actually how I got to be a chaplain at the hospital was I did an internship there, and upon getting ready to graduate in that year, I was offered a position. But typically the hospital want you to have what they call CPE, which is clinical pastoral education, and that's where you work as a chaplain for so many units, so many hours, before you can even be hired or employed as one. And I'd only done one unit, and that's working, you know, 25, 30 hours a week for free, just for the experience. So I truly
that
there's a gap. Yes.
Well, you are making the best argument, because you can certainly give this as a testimony. The whole problem that there's a mass dropout, by the way, and if you saw the pictures on the marquee, I showed some of the big name schools. It used to be, where did you go? And I was in an Ivy League school. I graduate from Harvard or Penn State or whatever, Caltech. But now, just graduating from any institution does not guarantee that you have any applicable skills. And that's the chill that goes down my spine. Now, as you may know, Cassandra, I am teaching. I'm teaching at Upper Iowa University, and this will be my third term coming up. I did get an invitation to do a term, which they call Term 4, and it starts February 29th. And I'm in my, I guess, heading to the sixth week out of 8-week course for biology. What I am finding, and what reason I guess this particular show kept my consciousness, is two things that came out that were said in the show, and then I'll speak for myself. One thing was, what is being seen is going to college is simply a delay in maturity. And I went, huh? That too many now go to college so they don't have to do the adult things. They don't have a rent because they're living in a dorm. Parents pay tuition. They go to class so they don't have to have a job. And what, unfortunately, according to the show, there has been this body of people who are not productive in a way that is applicable. If you think about a young person growing up on a farm, have to get up early in the morning because they must feed the chickens, or they must milk the cows, or they must till the land. There is a sense of duty, obligation, and organization. Well, if you have a child who goes through life where they have no chores or any requirements when they're in a household, going off to a dorm, they can set all their classes at 10 o'clock in the morning or later, even do evening classes, they have another 4 years of immaturity. And unfortunately, too many see college life as the time for drinking and recklessness and wildness. And meanwhile, there's a debt being racked up, whether parents are paying it or students are borrowing the money. And the question is, did we make a mistake allowing a 17 or 18-year-old choose that soft, cush way? And knowingly, we adults who are out there in the real world know that when they graduate, if you have $100,000 or $200,000 over your head, then you've almost condemned them, particularly those they were intended to help. Because if you're coming out of a low socioeconomic dynamic, mommy didn't have a trust fund, daddy didn't have a trust fund, and the average income in your neighborhood was $20,000, and you come out with a debt of $100,000, then that flips us right back into the arena we've talked about so much here in America, because Andrew's like, who you are
truly,
matters.
It is truly automatic. It is truly automatic enslavement. Just to add fuel to the fire, I can remember my parents dropping me off at North Carolina Central University summer of 89. It's when I entered North Carolina Central University. And you have your little money to go buy your books, and you go to the student union. And there was Chase Bank, Capital One, I don't know, every credit card company there in the student lounge. And it was so tempting. You feel like these applications that give you $200, $300, $500 worth of credit, and your payment is only $10 a month. I can remember that. I was like, oh, it's $10 a month. Well, you know, that's been some years ago, of course. And so I was getting $25 a week being sent to me. So, of course, I can save $3-4, right, from that weekly allowance to pay that $10 credit card. But then, as you say, you're socializing, you're partying, you're sleeping in, you're studying, you know, getting it all in, some more than others. And before you know it, you've missed one payment, and now it's not $10. There's a $35 late fee. And, of course, you run that card up to the max, right? And now it's over the limit because you're not keeping up with it. You think you have enough to buy those jeans or those shoes.
Well, you have no experience. So this is my point.
Yeah.
If you've never been responsible, you know, if you ever needed something, if mommy didn't get it, grandmommy did, or daddy did, there was no sense of money.
Exactly. But what happens is it really takes away from the next 5 to 7 years, even when you graduate, because you have the student loans, and then you have this compromised credit.
Yes.
Because of the small credit opportunities you know, partook in while you were young and immature. And now you're not crawling out of it until you're in your 30s.
And worse than that, and then this is what I really wanted to talk about, because our topic is centered on social justice, that what started out looking to be opportunity and what sounded so good coming out of the mouths of those who really knew consequences. Here's where my indictment comes. It's one thing. If someone asks me for advice and I don't know better and I advise them and find out it's wrong, then I feel an obligation to rescue them. I'd say, you know what, I told you to do that, and my goodness, I was wrong. Did it hurt you in any way? How can I help you? Well, here we are 40 years later from the Pell Grant programs and the student loan grant programs, and even President Obama, when he was going into the White House, made a statement of how many people well into their middle 30s and 40s are still paying student loans. But here's a newsflash for you, Cassandra, you may or may not have known. Senators' children don't have to repay student loans.
That is an
That's one of the perks of the office.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I start to say, wait a minute. You know, there are positions that the parent can be in the United States of America government where their children get all kinds of perks, and that's one of it. All if you get elected to the Senate, so if Senator Obama was owing anything, when he became Senator Obama, his debt was wiped clean. That's part of the perks. If his daughters go to any university, even if they needed to borrow money, which I'm sure they don't, they would not have to repay their student loan. So when I start to see this inequity, how the government realizes the burden that the student loan is, but yet allow those of us who are less likely to get to be a senator, less likely to have such perks, we are burdened. And then the second kick in the teeth is a percentage of interest. You know, if they really were saying, well, we don't want our young person so badly straddled, they already owe this amount of money, let's have 1% or less as our interest. No. The United States government slapped an interest rate onto these primary accounts as if they were further punishment, that someone can have a $30,000 loan and owe $150,000. The usury practiced by the United States government and their agents is exactly what they were shouting and punishing banks for doing in the housing industry. So I'm dizzy. I'm saying, wait a minute, hold up. How can you condemn one practice when
right.
you are, in fact, in the same practice? That the banks probably set up doing it, 15 years ago because they saw they had such a good thing going on student loans. I mean, it's almost as if half-truths are told. You know, if you think about it, particularly in a ministry situation, if you were ministering to a family and you were trying to help them deal with whatever their issues are, drawing on your counseling experience, and you only got half-truths, it is no way you can counsel. It's a very difficult thing to administer any kind of care when the whole truth is not known. And this is what was revealed in this particular mm-hmm. show I was watching earlier today on Pivot. It's a TV that you can get on Hulu and other private stations if you want to go back and pick it up. It was titled Higher Education, What Does It Really Cost? And their big point was college kids were fooled and then they were duped. And in Silicon Valley, they saw the very people who got disenfranchised, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates. If you follow the story of those who hit it big and just exploded on the scene as millionaires, they're college dropouts. And their big comment was, college now is a factory. That it's no longer teaching students how to think, which was the original charter. That higher education is not so much that you learn math or biology or chemistry, but you learn how to learn math and you learn how to learn biology. That the whole concept of scientific method and curiosity is supposed to be ignited. That's not what's happening. That we now, and I can do a testimony to the course I'm teaching biology, and I have 38 students. It is an enormous task to try to impart information uniformly to a group that's as diverse as the group that I have. And I put in easily, Cassandra, 60 hours a week after already having done my lesson plan. My lesson plan was finished by the end of September. But as I interact with my class and I get questions or they come in after the class is over and ask me things, I go back and reintegrate the kinds of question and interests that they have into the material. Because to me, if I don't address what they're curious about, they won't care about learning what I got to say.
Right.
And I'm told by the class, and they're mature students, these are not right out of high school. I have one 16-year-old, and then I guess the next age gap's probably 30. But they come to me and say, Dr. Bowles, you are the first teacher who, and whatever the rest of that follows. So when I saw the show today, Cassandra, I said, you know what? I have a ready testimony how unimpressed the students going to college are with the education they're getting. And my comment when I say social justice is, where do we start to clean up this corruption? I mean, when the banks collapsed, the government came and rescued them, and now I understand there are going to be some banks that are going to bring up on some charges after further investigation because of their egregious aggression to recruit people who didn't qualify and so forth. But what about student loans? How do we ignore what is going on and has been going on for now more than 40 years? And I'll just step back into Black American culture. We're still encouraging our children to go to college. I mean, I'm at a point where I would say I would defer college and do a trade school, make sure you know how to fix a car, weld something, or do some dental hygienist and have a job, and then do college. I mean, I'm really at a point when they ask me my advice, I tell them, I said, I'm not sure you're going to like what I'm going to tell you because having that master's degree or bachelor's degree in philosophy in the United States in 2015, unless your father's a Donald Trump's father, because he made a comment that his father gave him a small loan when he started out. You know what the small loan was? $1 million.
No, ma'am. Okay.
That's what he said. My dad gave me a small loan of $1 million. So unless you have, you know, that kind of cushion, it makes no
right.
sense to crawl out and make so much debt.
No,
just for those
no,
who mean,
doesn't.
I've seen them.
It,
I don't know
it
where
doesn't
to start.
Make sense.
And I try not to. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead and finish. Go ahead.
I said I try not to paint such a bleak picture. And one of the things I did after I saw the show and was miserably down Crescent is I said, what are the alternatives? And the good news, and I'll share this and then I'll give you the floor because I do want to hear what you have to say. Going to a four-year school is supposed to be the foundation to create a good future, and that's what we were told. And now that we see that when you get out and you don't have a job, there's absolutely no prospects that you can pay off this debt. So like you mentioned, your credit rating can go down. That will adversely affect your chance to get a house or a car. So whatever hopes of success you had has already been burdened by the process itself. So what can you do? What's a possible solution? So here goes Velva trying not to depress the world with her findings. What I did see is there's a group that's called Hacking Education. Now, the term hack is a modern usage. You hack into a computer, that means you broke into it. So now they're using that term to mean to dismantle established education. And when I saw that, I said, well, let me read a little bit more. There is a very successful, several, in fact, successful groups that are giving online free education. Now, I thought that was too good to be true, but guess what, Cassandra? I downloaded one of their programs on how to learn to speak Spanish, and I've been struggling to get more fluent in Spanish for years, and I've paid the big money for Prisler and other big-name Berlitz. And this free Spanish-speaking program is marvelous. It's simple. It's amusing. It's playful. And this particular free education is in the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N Academy, and you can Google it. And when you click on it, it lists all these various disciplines that you can self-teach by going online, and it's free. And if that's not good enough, it also, part of what I learned is a number of students register in some of the big name schools, identify what are the courses that they have to take at the school. You know, we have the major courses, and if I remember correctly, you have to have a minimum of so many credits at that school in order to declare your degree from that school. And what these students are doing is taking the absolute minimum amount, paying the absolute least amount of tuition and whatever to take the courses so that they can declare the school their alma mater. And meanwhile, they fill in their electives with these online courses. And that they're doing so marvelously, there's a whole group of them assembled in California who are declaring themselves separate from any university name, take all of their courses online, and Silicon Valley has embraced them. And those who want to do IT and other topics that are directly in line with what's going on in Silicon Valley, they are right out of high school, employed by the big boys, rubbing shoulder with the up-to-date types of technologies. And seems that this may be the new wave of entrepreneurs. And I was excited about that. But like I said, when I discovered the self-study potential, I said, you know what? People have smartphones. And these phones are just like any kind of computer. Many of us have access to multiple types of computers, if not in your library, in your school. If there were a mass effort, Cassandra, in the black community, encouraging the brightest to start their online college course training as soon as possible, not to wait for the dual enrollment stuff, not to wait for magnet schools, not to wait for the Department of Education, but let that be our movement. Can you just imagine? So I'm all heady now. Instead of being depressed and upset, I'm saying we can forge a solution. Our young people do not have to have $80,000, $100,000 debt when they're 21, 22 years old and walk out and get no employment for whatever reason, whether it's because they're female or they're black or the industry's slow or economic's slow. If we are ready to take charge of our own education, it's possible. So I guess my shout-out is we now have a platform where we can delegate some social justice. You know, our last shows a kind of a complaint of look what they do to us, look what they don't let us do. And I guess the point of this show in my mind is saying here's a possible solution. We don't have to depend on anyone. It doesn't have to be Harvard graduate. If what you know is applicable and relevant, the world will recognize you. You know, we used to wear the college we graduated from like a banner. And I get all these alma mater requests, you know, for funding. And I pause and I say, you know what? I was one of those integration babies. And I didn't have the best experiences at these austere universities. I don't have that warm and fuzzy when I start to think of the institutions of higher learning that I attended. And It was more the idea of what the school name was. It was kind of like, prove that I can do it. Wouldn't it be nice to get a higher education, enjoy it along the way, have no debt, and then be able to do something that I think, like the show indicated today, allowing 17-year-olds, 17, 18-year-olds to embark on this very expensive journey through a four-year education is poor parenting. That we need to step in. We need to evaluate. For those who are saving, I know some people said, I've been putting in my kid's college fund since he was born. Maybe that money would be better spent doing something else. I don't say don't save it. But I am strongly now saying, why do we buy into the concept that it's a four-year college is the best way for an education? I even advocate it is not. And I think with the American way, and particularly with our wave of immigrant potential, if you look at the SAT scores, the ones that score the highest are our Asian compadres who immigrate. It's not the Black Americans. So although we may accrue our $100,000 debt, we're not on top of the academic scale when we're in school.
Right. Well, one of the things that I think is important is internships and having an opportunity to work, be for hire in the discipline in which you're studying. And that's something we're not good at. I can remember having a peer's grandson get, I think, a $25,000 internship, and I was working the whole year for free. And I had some resistance to that. And when we go back to issues of social justice, you know, there are things that we African Americans as a people don't know, information we don't have privy to, nor do we have a source, a networking source, to even get those types of benefits. And once we arrive, we need to be better. We as a people need to be better about creating those internships and opportunities for our children to have that exposure and to offset the cost of their education. You know, if I was looking for a practical way to deal with this issue, I believe education is important. And so there are a lot of jobs you can't work unless you have that education. But we don't have the support of our communities that we need to give our children the resources that other children have.
Certainly what you said is true, but even to a bigger scale, unfortunately, we aren't the owners of companies. We are not the owners of banks. So like you mentioned, you were working for free and someone else came with a paid internship. When I was with Westinghouse many years ago, I was put in charge of a mentoring program where they did have paid internships, and they had an application program that the applications were dispersed in February, and we were taking the students during their summer break from May until September. And when I took it over, I was inundated by colleagues saying, oh, can I get a copy of that application? It might be January. And I said, no, applications are dispersed, you know, February 15th. Oh, yeah, but I want a copy now because I'm going to send one to my niece in France, or I'm going to give this to my cousin in Florida. They will come to visit me this summer. And I was just flabbergasted saying, okay, is this how it's usually done? that whoever's in charge disperses these applications early to the privileged, who go and extend it to their relatives, and then those who it was intended for get the leftovers.
Yes, I learned
it firsthand. I don't have to even, but you know what, Cassandra, we have run out of time. I am so glad to have you join me today, and we have to talk off the radio. But listeners, this is it for us, and I thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, take care.